I would like to welcome you, kind human, to the Nerdist Podcast number 147. It has been recorded. The Nerdist television show for BBC America has been taped. It's going to be airing December 24th. That would be Christmas Eve, just in case you don't know stuff. And that's going to be at 9, 8 Central on BBC America. Amazing show. I can't even wrap my feeble brain around the people we were able to get on the show. It's, of course, Matt, Jonah, Mike Furman, Kumail Nanjiani, and Will Wheaton, Nathan Fillion, Simon Pegg, and finally, David Tennant! I can't even have the words! So please watch that. I think if you listen to this podcast, there's going to be at least 5 things relevant to your interests on that show. And it's an hour long, so you get an hour with us on Christmas Eve, but it was an incredible amount of fun to shoot, and we hope you like it, and we've got more Nerdist TV specials on the way. We'll also be coming to your town, well, maybe not your town, but a town in your region. We have a bunch of live dates coming up, so go to Nerdist.com and check those out. The most recent one we announced was January 28th at the Regency Theater as part of SF Sketchfest up in San Francisco, so check that out. Also like to thank GoToMyPC for being a returning sponsor of the Nerdist Podcast. The iPad has been an amazing invention, but functionality cannot replace your office computer unless you have GoToMyPC app for the iPad. GoToMyPC is the missing link to convert your iPad into your computer. You can access your entire home or office PC right from your iPad. It gives you the best of both worlds. More freedom, more power, sets up in minutes. No IT help is required. You don't need someone snarking at you because you don't know how to set up a machine. It's all right in the palm of your hand. GoToMyPC for iPad is free. Go to download the free app in the App Store, then visit GoToMyPC.com and click the Try It Free button and then enter the promo code Nerdist. Okay, the Nerdist Podcast episode number 147. I love these crossovers because I love all the comics who are off doing amazing things on their own podcasts. And this episode is long overdue. And so I'm making a public apology, which I will probably make again on the podcast to him. Ladies and gentlemen, you've seen him at clubs and colleges. Jimmy Pardo! Oh, you guys can't see it, but the waveform on that was really hot. Sound editing makes me horny.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Nothing?
Nothing. I thought I saw one.
That's a bummer.
Pardo. Pardo.
Jimmy.
Pardo.
Is that to Thriller?
That's Billie Jean.
Billie Jean.
Yeah. Which, Michael.
I was close.
You were close.
Yeah.
Get on the microphone. We've already started recording.
Oh, what?
Yeah. Yeah, that's how it works.
Yeah.
That can't be true.
We like to start without Matt.
What? You really?
Where did Matt go?
He went to go get waters.
Oh, he went to get waters for one. How nice.
Yeah.
Broke bad on me. Okay.
You sound good. You look good.
Thank you, brother. Thank you. We all look good. We're all good looking men.
Jimmy Pardo, it's a fucking crime that I haven't had you on the show before now.
I didn't know at what point I would get insulted, but I can tell you we passed it. it was at some point. Oh, look who showed up without water.
There's no water, again.
In the
dress rooms are locked.
You know what I did notice in that refrigerator that you told me to look and see if there were donuts? No donuts, but there's sodas in there.
Oh. Do you guys want to talk to our guest for a second and I will go get waters?
Well, how are we going
to
do that?
Well,
he's Chris Hardwick.
I have access to the key,
Chris Hardwick. Never mind.
Which I will open the makeup room door.
He's Chris Hardwick.
Yeah, that only means kind of something
in this
1,500 square feet.
Big
hey,
C,
and
do what
parts
you
of Comic Con. Parts of Comic Con that means something too.
Yeah, but in San Diego, there are a couple of aisles I can walk down where. Hang on a sec. I'm gonna get.
I
water.
Can't imagine this is a good call leaving me with these two.
Good
I
work,
can't
Keith.
Imagine this is gonna
on,
go
Jimmy,
well.
Come on.
I can't. Oh,
because you know you're never gonna have.
Oh, never. So. No. There's no question. I've got my list together, and these two don't make it. Well, Jonah's got a good shot. Matt, I'm not going to lie to you. guy from Backroom at Apple, not going to make the cut.
I don't work there anymore.
Right, but you once did, and I swore to God I would never have a guy on that worked in the backroom at Apple.
That's true.
That's a true statement.
I work upstairs now.
He actually did a background check on me just to make sure I never did.
You did. I found other reasons not to have you on, apparently. It just wasn't that one.
But happy alcoholic? Which one?
Boy, look You're at my making. Improv skills. Look at mine. Look at my ability to riff. I'm uncomfortable that I'm standing up and still shorter than you guys sitting.
I'm standing.
Well, I apologize.
I'm standing.
Thought you were sitting as well.
I could.
No, you. I want you to be comfortable. This is your dojo.
I don't often get a chair.
I might not even be able to stick around for the whole time.
Why?
Because I got to start.
Because I started. Because I arrived late.
I got to start setting up the Meltdown show tonight.
Oh, over at the.
You don't really have to set it up.
No, I got to be there because we're doing stuff there tonight.
Yeah. What are you doing?
So I'm just putting on a comedy show.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. Hey, I also have a list, Jimmy.
Hey, short chair. listen, I'm happy to do that show whenever you want me.
Really?
Yeah.
I just never wanted to I always feel weird asking because it's like even though the shows are great, I always feel like it's like I'm asking a favor. It's like, hey, if you'd have time. But that's the main reason we started putting
Waters.
It on. Thank you, Chris.
It's the main reason we started doing it on Wednesdays
so we can have our friends that are normally on the road,
right.
Be able to do it.
Well, I'd be more than happy to do it. I'm no longer boycotting doing local shows, so I'm in.
Yeah, because I think I remember when I started it.
You
were just trying to be very selective. Like Paul F does the same thing where he only does his show.
Yes.
And I think this is a good way to go about things.
What
are you guys talking about? The internet?
Yep.
Yes. Yeah, we're talking about the internet.
Jimmy. Always talking,
Love
about, the
talking
internet.
About the internet.
Guys, I'll tell you what.
Jimmy, you can learn anything. Anything you want to know.
I did learn something last night. I did look something up about leaving a light on in a child's room affect their growth? And the answer is yes.
What?
Because the melatonin does not kick in. They don't get enough sleep, and then they don't know so they're cranky, and then they don't know how long they've been around.
I left a light on constantly.
Yes, and look at how you turned out.
I could leave. I could leave, and everything would be just the same.
We'll just
continue to make fun of Matt. I have no place
that's
here.
The dynamic.
I apologize. I am a guest in your house. I should not have said that, but you should now live in a world of darkness.
No, I mean,
turn out all the lights.
What happened was I watched Gremlins when I was a little too young, so I kept the light on.
Yes, the family comedy movie Gremlins.
Yep. Well,
sure, gather the family around.
And I left the light on so Mogwais wouldn't turn into Gremlins. Mm-hmm. And I did that until I was 13.
Mogwai, too much responsibility.
Exactly what I'm saying.
Jimmy, do you need help?
Jimmy, those are broken, and you're never going to get it to where you want it.
Your microphone. Right. I know you have a much more professional setup on your show.
Than a radio station? Sure we do. Sure. I was talking to Pat Francis, friend of the show, third chair. He hosts the podcast Rock Solid. Mm-hmm. On my way in, and I said, I'm doing the Nerdist tonight. And he said, where are they at? I go, a radio station. Where do you think they do it? Where do you think the Nerdist is going to do their podcast from? Of course it's from a radio station.
Well, we're almost done with our little studio at Meltdown. I just did Ricky Lindholm's show, and then we actually did it at Meltdown. Yeah,
Is it all soundproofed up already?
It's all soundproofed up. Yeah,
but there I've seen pictures of your show. Everyone's so casual. It looks like nice seats.
We have casual seating in there. Seating for four, of course. If you turn a stool upside down, that's a joke from a guy on the south side of Chicago. There's a, the north side's considered to be where your homosexuals will hang out in Chicago.
All the homosexuals?
Most of them are up in that area. There's very few on the south side because that's where the guys hang out, guys.
Yeah.
So
that's the repressed homosexuals.
Yeah.
No question. Hey, I'll tell you something about those Bears. Those outfits, those uniforms look great this year. Hey, but what about the queers up north, huh? They like those Broadway shows.
Hey, you don't think they probably like my dick in your hand a lot more than I do right now.
Hey, you know what? You're right. No one likes a dick in a Ditka.
Hey,
that's right, his name.
Hey, what am I in some kind of Second City sketch over here?
Hey, let me tell you stuff, Bears. Let me tell you something. So this guy used to turn on the south side, he used to turn a stool upside down and go, hey, take a look at that. Seating for four on the north side.
Wow.
Yeah, because they put it up their ass, of course.
Yeah, Blaine Kapatch said once, local jokes get you local work.
Yeah. Oh, boy, that's a good call. Well, this guy owned the club, in fairness.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
And he's a good man. I actually feel bad crapping on him.
And also, Blaine Kapatch, coming from the guy who has a joke about the dash bus going down Franklin.
Dash bus!
Dash bus.
That's funny.
I love it.
James, you are one of the the forefathers and front runners of comedy podcasters.
Okay.
I feel like it was, you know, years ago, Ricky, I mean, I know there were others, so you don't, guys, please, I don't want the audience emailing me like, well, Dave Butterworth did it in 2004. I get it.
Oh, the butter cast.
Yeah, the butter cast.
Is that really
yeah.
good
You don't think it was just the butt cast? You don't think it was that?
No. But that was what everyone referred to it as.
It's butter worth it, he would say. I hated that guy.
I don't like
he
him.
He doesn't exist. But after, you know, when you started around 2007, maybe?
2006.
2006.
April of 2006. What I like to say, because I know there were podcasts before us, but I'd like to say I think other than Ricky Gervais, I'm the first professional comedian
right.
to do a podcast.
Yeah.
I know there were other comedy ones out there. I'm not going to deny anybody. But I think I was the first, like, with working. Any sort of other recognition working other than Gervais to have a podcast.
You don't seem nerdy or tech savvy. So why, how come you decided to, like, I'm going to jump into this?
I partnered up with Matt Belknap, who's nerdy and tech savvy.
Without a doubt. Matt Belknap.
Yeah.
For most of the people who don't know, Matt Belknap, who was on Jimmy's show and produced the show, really, for a long time. Does he still produce the show?
Yeah, he still produces it, but you know, he's more of a co-host sidekick at this point.
Right.
He's so funny.
So Matt started this...
I'm kidding. I think he's brilliantly funny, but
yeah,
I can't...
Yeah, Matt's on any podcast.
The story of Matt Belknap is really interesting. Matt...
He brought the technology to the comedy scene.
He really did. Years ago, Matt was a huge... Tenacious D fan started a website called aspecialthing.com, which mainly was a message board, which right around the time
for Tenacious D fans originally,
yeah,
right.
And then right around 2003, maybe 2002, 2003,
it was shortly after
Aukerman started Comedy Death Ray,
yeah,
at M-Bar,
yeah,
and so the shows were pretty popular right out of the gate because there wasn't really a good big show. Like the Largo show, the Monday Night Largo show had sort of died down a little bit.
Kind of dipped, and then this was on Tuesday night, and like it was a new place to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And somehow got anointed as the hip comedy place.
Well, Aukerman and Porter wrote for Mr. Show, right. And so they were comics in their own right and funny and new. They just got a lot of, you know, like in the first shows, it was like, you know, Dave Cross and
were you on the first show?
I wasn't on the very first show.
I thought you and me and Danielle, my beautiful wife Danielle.
Well, maybe
Koenig.
We were.
I think it was you, me, Danielle Koenig, and boy, two other people. I don't remember. I could be wrong, but I swear to God, I thought you were on it.
If I wasn't, that was like a lot of the show early, like in the early days of that show. Like that could have been any lineup, like in the first couple months or couple weeks.
It was really solid. It was really solid, and so it was all you know, like it really was a magnet for the comedy nerds in Los Angeles. And so, so Matt Belknap. With the screen name, with the message board name ISOS, in search of Sasquatch, which was a Tenacious D song, started cataloging and reviewing these shows.
Yes.
And the comics took notice because we're narcissistic and like to read about ourselves.
It was crazy.
But Matt had this job where he was doing script breakdowns.
Right.
So he worked for a producer or a studio or something, and he would basically do script coverage. And so he would do these really detailed accounts of the shows and what bits were done and how they were received. And they were pretty good. They were actually beautifully written.
Yeah, no, they were.
But the
good.
Comics started getting aggro about it because it's like, oh fuck, now I'm afraid to try new stuff because they're cataloging all the bits.
Well, they're cataloging and reviewing.
Yeah,
reviewing, so it's like, well, then Chris Hardwick tried this bit that didn't go over so well. Well, go fuck yourself. What do you mean?
And also, the crazy part about it too is that it wasn't like it was, you know, no one knew who the guy was. We're seeing it now, like it's like, oh, this guy Matt came around, and it's like everyone would be like, I think that guy's Sasquatch.
That might be him.
That's the guy.
No one knew who it was, so there was this weird mystery element. And then after a little while, Furman and I contacted him just because we kind of wanted to know who he was and kind of figure out if there was a way to work with the site a little bit more and help build it out. And so we met him, and he was just a really sweet, kind of normal, nerdy guy.
Nice guy.
Yeah.
Funny and, you know, but that message board ruled the comedy.
The old comedy scene, yeah.
Yeah, for a long time.
Kindler became, I think, the most obsessed with it.
Well, because it was crazy. Like, because all of a sudden people were going there, and it's like you wanted to see the review of the show from the night before. Yeah. How did Sasquatch think I did?
Yeah.
I sure hope he thought I had a good set.
Oh, I remember being so disappointed by it. Like, it's like he was reviewing every show, and then I guess he didn't go to the first time I was on since he had started reviewing. And he just, so there was no review. And I remember just being in the house like, what?
And then other people started reviewing shows. And then, of course, you know, a message board is basically a feeding ground for a troll. So then a couple of comedy snob trolls came on, and you could never... It's even though you know how trolls work, it was impossible to not get sucked in.
Yes.
And so it was... You know, like, I stopped going on the board after a while because I'm like, well, I don't have the ability to pull myself out of it enough to go, well, that I don't know anything about that person. He might be crazy. I still, you know.
Yeah.
So I became less involved because I felt like I started writing more for that fucking board.
No question.
Yeah.
No question. You know, my friend Mike Schmidt likes to say that, you know, it's fighting with ghosts. Like, when somebody says something on the internet and you respond to them, you're punching air. They're going to win every time.
Absolutely.
Because they're not going to stop writing.
Yeah, you're swinging your sword going, where are you? Yeah. Show yourself!
Show yourself!
And they're just giggling in the wallpaper and looking through the little painting eyes as you walk by.
With hipster glasses on.
So that's where Matt Belknap came from. And then Matt started Special Thing Records and started producing a bunch. I mean, like, Matt had the right mindset to look at this scene and say, this is a thing, and I want to catalog this thing. And that's what he started doing. And he's made a business out of it. And
he put out my record, yeah.
Yeah. And how did he get involved with you?
He was coming to, you know, I started doing my talk show, Running Your Trap at the M Bar, as part of Comedy Death Ray. And then when the UCB opened, I started doing my show over there. And Matt and his wife were like, you know, they were fans. And they would come out and they would support that show more than anybody. And then he started AST Radio. So he kind of was doing a podcast prior.
It was kind of
a Charlie Rose, you know, let's talk seriously about comedy, which I thought was terrific.
He's got that voice, too. That perfect Charlie Rose deep voice.
Oh, and he experimented with Birth of a Joke. Did you ever do Birth of a Joke?
I didn't, but I saw yours.
I did one,
some other young lady who I don't... know if she's even doing comedy anymore. I forget her name.
I don't remember who else did it.
Is it Dr. Sanjay Gupta?
It was Dr. Sanjay. No, I think it was...
he's still doing comedy.
I think it's going to be so offensive.
It was Toni Morrison. It was not Toni Morrison.
But what happened was, Matt, I went on his show as a guest to talk about comedy. And when it was over, he said, you know what? Why don't we just convert Running Your Trap, the talk show, into a podcast? You're better at being a host than I am. Why don't we have it where I produce it, you do this? And I was like, well, I was between television jobs at that time. Mm. And I went...
Funny Money?
Okay. Funny Money was off. AMC was off. Looking, you know, waiting around, auditioning, you know, bouncing around, hoping for other gigs, doing a zillion pilots, nothing getting picked up. And he's like, you know, we'll do it once a week. I'll come to your house. I'll set up the equipment. And we did the first one. And I always compared to when we got on iTunes, we were battling people that were basically talking into the microphones on their computer in their basement. And we had a professional equipment, a mixing board, microphones, and I wanted it to sound like a radio show. So we were competing against amateurs, you know, and doing a professional show. So the people at iTunes took a liking to us because, oh my God, who's this guy? Who cares? And people were like, oh, I can listen to this on my way to work. I don't have to listen to morning radio. This isn't like other podcasts. And so we became popular right away. Like, we had this really neat cult audience that grew and then plateaued. But the point is this. And we did that to ourselves by charging money, but you know, I'm thrilled. So go ahead. Question.
No, it's good though. You have the freemium model, which is like you get a half hour free show.
Half hour, 20 minutes. I'm not giving away the whole farm. Half hour. God, who's crazy enough to give away that kind of time?
Seriously, you just have to time some kind
10
of
10 extra minutes. 23 tops.
You know what? Sometimes it sneaks in at 23.
and then after that, people pay a subscription of $5 a month, right? To get the
you know what? It's $20
bucks for the season.
Dollars for 26 episodes.
Yeah.
That's a great deal.
Yes, it's 77 cents a week.
That's really good. And because I don't know many other shows, actually, there aren't really anything I can think of. I mean, This American Life does their sort of archived thing where they archive the shows and you can buy those, but no one else has really had a successful run with a subscription model. It's probably because you did it pretty early on.
I did it,
Poor Kevin Pollak took a bath when he tried it, and I felt so bad for him.
At the wrong time. I did it at the exact right window. I did it where podcasting still wasn't, the boom hadn't happened yet. And so, like, there was this little window where I thought about quitting. Like, this seems like I'm doing cable access. Why am I doing this? Who's listening to this?
Yeah.
You know, yes, I have my core group of fans, which I love, and I love doing the show for them, but I kind of felt like a loser. You know, like, I'm still just this guy talking at my dining room table. You know, why am I doing this? So I said to Matt, you know, let's try charging. Mm-hmm. Let's see if we can, you know, get the, you know, not get them to pay for it, but we're putting out a professional show. I'm getting great guests. Let's try charging. And if they don't, we'll quit.
Mm-hmm.
And they did. They paid. And they've you know, that core group has continued to pay. And we build, you know, the pay of people has built slowly, but that core cult little niche audience is there.
Mm-hmm.
And then the boom happened. But I think if I would have if I would have tried charging even a month later, I don't think it would have happened.
Right.
I think I did it in the exact right second of podcasting.
Yeah, I remember that very vividly when
everybody said, "You're gonna fail."
I bought it.
Nobody's gonna pay for a pod. You're gonna fail. You guys are gonna be losers. And it's like, well, we proved them wrong.
What do you know about podcasting? Yeah. Nothing yet. It hasn't been around long enough, but you're gonna fail.
You're gonna fail at it.
But that must be such a great, that must have been one that, like, a highlight of, like, the whole, you know, process.
Yes.
That, like, just that validation of that, like, straight up validation of you as a, you know, a comedic output. Just,
yeah.
Like, these people are dedicated.
They're paying to hear me.
Yeah.
And there's nothing more flattering than that.
Yeah, that's gotta be such, like, the greatest feeling. Because it's, like, such a risk, too. And you took it, and then it worked out.
But the show's so much fun, and I've done the show several times, and it's fun.
And you
do the all night marathons,
yes,
every once in
a while.
Which
you've been a part of as well.
Which are great. And, but all the shows that you do are really fun to, you know, like, not only running your trap, but the match game shows
were
some of the most fun shows at UCB.
Yes.
That I ever was able to do. Actually, do we ever do them at Largo?
No,
UCB.
It was UCB.
Oh, we did him at SF Sketchfest. That's where we did him at SF
Sketchfest. Yeah. Up in Vancouver.
I used to go to every match game.
The match games were, there was something special about those shows, so that the audience was so into it. The comics were into it. You were on, in fact, I put together, I remember the finale.
Mm-hmm.
They were shutting us down.
Oh, I have pictures
legally
of that.
They were shutting us down, Matt.
Which was a crazy story. That are you allowed to talk about what happened?
Sure. What do you want to?
That TBS decided they wanted to do Match Game as a TV show, and then didn't hire you, but sort of kind of made it. I mean, they didn't. Did they tell you couldn't do the show anymore?
Yeah. They the next step was lawsuit. Not TBS, the production company.
Okay.
They said, you know, because then we tried to do it up. We did up in Sketchfest with a different name.
Right.
Game show explosion.
And they said, they go, yeah, we know what you're doing up there.
but did you fire back with, so how's that match game pilot, you guys?
Yeah,
what happened? There's no point.
I just shut it down, and we did our farewell at the end. You know what? I thought that had run its course as well. I think it
ran for a while,
and it was lines wrapped around the block.
Yeah.
And people were thrilled to be there. But you know, it was a lot of it was a hassle. I mean, it sounds like such petty nonsense, but it was a hassle to book the panels. And then I had to watch Match Game and get the questions.
Right.
And so, like, I was doing all this work.
That was the first live thing I went to in California. Like, I moved here. And then 2 days later, I was like, I'm not doing it. I'm not having left the house. I got to go do something.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. And then I went on the UCB's website, and I saw this. I was like, oh, all right. I could do this.
And had we been doing it a while? Or were you at our very first one?
No, it was February 2007.
I don't remember when we started, nor do I remember when we ended.
It was a lot. It was a lot of work to build that extra long microphone, which was.
Yeah. Eventually, I bought one. You know, but our final one was. I picked the panel that I wanted, the people that I thought were the best at the game and that had fun with the game, and it was you and my beautiful wife Danielle, Paul F. Tompkins, Scott Aukerman, Matt Walsh, and Andy Daly.
Uh-huh.
No, wrong. Andy Daly
was
not
him?
There. No, he was not, because
Richter.
He went, no, no.
Wasn't Andy Richter?
No. Who was that? Paul Gilmartin.
Yeah.
Paul Gilmartin. I wanted to do the last one with a bunch of friends. And it was, you know, there was a lot of melancholy in the air. There was, you know, everybody was, you know, sad. It was a little maudlin when it ended.
The last old man, old man Peabody.
Old man Periwinkle.
The last one.
It was,
so
sad. You know, I miss doing it. I do miss doing that show. And I wish TBS and that production company would have hired me. But they, you know, they hired Andy Daly to do the pilot. And
was weird for you.
He was weird. He's my friend.
Yeah.
And we all want jobs.
Yeah.
But I know it was weird for everybody involved.
Yeah.
Well, only from the and Andy's one of my favorite comedy actors. I've never seen him really host anything, so that's why it was sort of a weird, like, oh, that's interesting, because he does the most amazing improv and sketch character work
yes.
of anyone you've ever And I encourage people to go out and buy Nine Sweaters, which is his stand-up album.
Or just check out even the track on the CDR album is one of my all-time. Like, I put that on mixes all the time. Yeah.
I wonder, there's this guy over here.
Yeah. You got some guy going, hey, what's going on?
I
got
the other guy going, whoa. And so just to hear that he was hosting a show, I was like, oh, wow, I didn't know he, you know, but that's, that was... For what, but whatever.
I would have been really happy for him had I not been up for it. You know what I mean? It would, I mean, I'm not going to lie. It hurt when I didn't get that job.
Is that weird? Because I feel like, you know, there's a pool of us who would always see each other at host auditions. I would always see you at host auditions and maybe a handful of other people. And, you know, I don't know. Does that – I never really felt competitive in that way, but I wasn't close to any of those shows the way that you were close to Match Game.
Competitive's not the right word in this case. I Match Game was like this dream since I was 8 to host Match Game and then to be doing it live and to build up this audience and to have people coming out to see the Match Game with Jimmy Pardo and then to have them, hey, we're doing a pilot and you're one of the 3 people we want to host it. Holy shit. Really? When I was 8? If you would have told me that, I would. That's crazy talk. And so to get that close and then have a friend get it, I mean, it hurt. I mean, that's the only way to put it. It's like, I mean, it didn't hurt that Andy got it. I was happy that somebody I knew got it.
You needed Peter LaSalle in your corner like he was for Letterman when Letterman didn't get the Tonight Show.
Yeah. I needed somebody.
You could have had your own match.
You know what I needed? Daily not to audition. That's what I needed. I needed Daily not to be involved in that. And it was weird. You know, we saw each other at the thing, and, you know, he called me that morning, and maybe I'm talking too much behind the curtain, but, you know, he was like, this is weird. I think it's weird that I'm going in.
He's such a sweet guy, too.
Yeah. And we're friends. Our kids are friends. We watch Super Friends. I mean, Friends are involved. I mean, it's so many years ago now, but, you know, I don't remember any of the details. I do know that I wished him death.
Right. But other than that, once you got over that.
No, I wish Rebecca, you know, we're having
sandwiches. That show was so much fun, and I always had a great time doing it. And but you've done a bunch of other stuff as well. I mean, you've done a million. You know, you're one of those guys that's always trying things and pitching shows and trying different shows at the live space and really kind of using the theater, like the UCB theater, as a place to experiment with new kinds of things.
I was told that's what it was for. And it was like when, you know, I started in Chicago with Matt Walsh and Matt Besser and we would do open mics at a place called the Roxy together. And, you know, we were all doing stand up and then, you know, unbeknownst to me, I moved out here. They moved out. They went to New York and got famous and bought theaters.
Yep.
And, and then they came to L.A. and Besser called me up and said, hey, we're opening up a theater, you know, at the UCB and we want you to do shows there, you know, and just use it as your playground, you know, you know, anything that you want to develop. You know, and so when they first opened, it was before like this whole UCB crowd from New York came in. And so I was doing 3 shows a month there.
There was all kinds of crazy shows going on in the early times.
It was great. And it was like you could fail, you know, try this. And so I tried the talk show, which, you know, nothing, I'm not patting myself on the back. Nothing I ever did failed. It's just, you know, it's like, well, we're doing a talk show. Who cares? You know,
Love the intro video to the talk show, to Running Your Trap, when you're wheeling the chair around.
Pushing the chair
studios.
To networks and nobody wants me. So then I run it through the UCB. These losers will take me. I'm grateful to those guys. And I'm always trying, you know, new game shows and stuff. What am I doing over there now? Yeah, my game show that you've done. Have you?
Yeah.
Have you done Running Your Trap, the game show?
Yeah, but I haven't done it in a long time.
Damn right. I'm trying to keep you away from it. Not comfortable with you being there.
Yeah, You're right. But it's interesting to watch. I mean, like, you were definitely an inspiration behind why I wanted to start a podcast.
Thank you.
Because, you know, for the longest time, I kept... It's just, I had put it off for so long because I thought, oh, I don't know what to do with a podcast. It's got to be, you know... It's got to be like a sketch show or it's got to be a thing, you know, and then I realized like, wait, Jimmy just talks to people. You can just talk to people.
Sure.
Or you can talk for 3 hours about politics. That works.
Really?
What about pop?
That was the one that he produced.
Oh, I'm playing dumb.
Okay, good, good, good. And so really, you know, but you were really on the forefront there and it's. Whose fucking phone is that?
That's Matt Myers.
Matt, playoffs.
You know how silent works? It's literally a switch.
He knows nothing about Apple products.
What is this? I don't understand.
What was that? Why would you throw your phone?
Don't worry about it.
Remember, those visual gags don't work too well.
I'm always a fan of the guy that does something dumb and then to cover it, don't worry about it.
Makes it worse.
I don't want to go with it. Don't worry about it.
I just start hitting it with a hammer.
I'm stupid. You're stupid.
I like the guy that like is so cool, but he drops something and doesn't want to bother picking it up because picking things up that you dropped isn't cool at all.
That's a sign of weakness.
Yeah, show up.
That is a sign of weakness.
I don't need
that thing anymore. Yeah, exactly. I had it in my hand and now I don't. Yeah. And I don't care.
I saw a guy drop $5 and he saw it and he stopped and he could totally tell what it was, but then just walked away from it.
Wow. Can't even be bothered.
I was at an audition. It's got to be 12 years ago when pagers were still kind of like actors were just getting pagers.
Right.
And so I was like one of the first guys in my group to get a pager.
Jimmy, you got to get to that Tyson Chicken audition.
That was it. Like buzz, buzz. Oh, what's happening? Oh, oh, important show business is buzzing on my belt.
Show business is buzzing.
So I had this, you know, you had that little holster for the pager.
Yep.
And I was with Todd Glass, our mutual friend Todd Glass, and it was at an audition that was on the second floor, but they had a balcony. So I was doing this bit about important show business buzzing me, and I'm going to, oh, hang on, Todd, I'm getting a buzz. And I pulled it out, and it flew out of my hand, and in slow motion, I watched it spin to the ground and shatter into 3 million pieces.
Oh, no.
And it was like, really, was that worth the bit?
Comedy accidents always hurt 30% more. Because they didn't have to.
They didn't have to happen.
It was all for vanity. It's a vanity accident.
Yeah, that's what I hate about pratfalls. That where you actually get hurt.
Right.
You just go. You go.
It's like wrecking your car because you're trying to put on lipstick. It's like you didn't need to do that right then. And also, why am I wearing lipstick in the car, Jonah?
I don't know.
Why am I wearing lipstick at all? I just want to be pretty.
Sometimes people are soothing. It's soothing to people to put that on.
Oh, it is
very nice. Yeah, it is.
I would recommend using just a lip balm.
You think so? I don't like anything on my lips.
Well, if you're going to go lipstick, go clear.
I don't like the feeling of it.
You're the guy that started this premise. You can't deny it now.
Damn it. I don't understand how improv works.
A second ago, you're putting on lipstick. I suggest you go to a balm. Now your answer is, I don't do it at all.
No, I'm not.
Blackout.
Was that good? Scene.
Perfect. I'm really good
at that.
Did
you ever do sketch and improv?
What are you asking me?
I'm asking you if you ever did sketch and improv.
Oh, it's a direct question?
Yeah. I'm in Chicago.
I started in Second City. I did some classes at Second City. Then I moved on. No, I took some classes. But I watch things like ASCAT and I watch, you know, that long form. And I wish I could jump in. But I just know one of two things would happen. I would jump in and I would be as good as I think I hope I could be.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a sentence?
Yep.
But I fear it would go completely the other way and I would freeze up and I would suck at it. So I just sit on the side and watch in awe.
Yeah. It is pretty. It's a whole other muscle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a whole other muscle that's opposite the stand-up muscle. And it always feels
a
little weird.
It's a cool feeling, though. Back when I was like taking classes at UCB when they first opened up, like doing a Herald, and when it works out and where you get a good laugh line and the show's over, it's a different feeling when you're coming off a stage with a few other people,
mm-hmm.
and everyone's like, wow, what? Let's all go grab a beer now. And then instead of like doing really well, and then just you walk off stage as a comic and you're just by yourself still.
Well, stand-up is very isolating. Are you doing a lot of touring still?
Not as much as I used to, of course. You know,
because you're working on Conan
my
now.
My lucrative job over at the Conan O'Brien program. I go on about one. Oh, heads up. I'm dying.
Wow.
I'm okay.
Is that a heart attack or a burp?
I believe it was a heart attack.
Okay. All right.
I'm not a doctor.
Well, you still seem okay.
It's a cardiac episode.
You think? I don't know.
I'm not a doctor either, but I think your aorta might be punctured. Oh, now, I'm just throwing that out there.
No, I can't breathe. By the way, I choked on a chicken turkey sandwich on my way home last night.
It was my favorite bit of his.
Idiot. Idiot's a compliment. For people that don't know, idiot's a compliment. When I call you an idiot, that means I'm happy. I had to pull over. I choked. I was choking on my sandwich, and I had to pull over in my car last night and kind of give myself a Heimlich on my car door. It was awful.
Wow. What the fuck?
Right on Highland Avenue.
Wow. Really?
Zero people helped.
No. Why would they? He's causing traffic. Just choke and get it over with.
I'm grabbing the door and I'm trying to. And then eventually it came up.
People walking by just think there's a guy trying to hump his car.
Yeah, look, they were trying to bang my car.
Let me ask you this. Did you finish the sandwich?
Yeah. I gave my esophagus about a 10-minute break and then went,
Matt, you're going to resent the sandwich for something you did to yourself? It's not the sandwich's fault.
You're not going to take me, sandwich. You're not going to fucking take
me. You're not bringing me down.
Why don't you choke on me, sandwich? You fucking choke on me.
That's right.
Dick sandwich.
Fucking sandwich. What? What happened?
Whoa.
What am I doing?
So you're not on the road as much anymore.
I'm not as much as anymore, but it was going back to what Jonah. It getting off stage, it was lonely. It was horrible.
It can be hard after that second. After the second show on Friday, I always get a little sad because you're up there, you know, basically like, hey, look at me, and you're trying so hard to make people happy and laugh, and then sometimes every once in a while you just feel a little empty afterwards, like, ah. I got nothing left.
Yeah. Yeah. Howard Kramer talks about that a lot now. Like, he's like, you know, you go and you have a huge, great show. And then, like, you know, half hour later, you're just in your apartment.
Alone.
Yeah. Alone.
In your hotel room in a weird town that you don't know where to go. And, you know, especially if you don't drink, like, you know, oh, that was it. Can we talk about that for a second?
Sure.
You're open about that stuff, right? Again, so you were an inspiration to me for podcasting, thank you for that.
My pleasure.
Were an inspiration to me with sobriety at the same time.
Is that true? I did not know that
part. Yes, it is. Because after I got sober, I did not gel with the AA program.
Right.
And I don't disparage the AA program. I think AA works great for a lot of people. I just didn't vibe with it for whatever reason. I always would feel good, and then I would go to a meeting, and then I felt bad afterwards. And I don't know why. I would just see people kind of, you know, talking about their low points, and I would just kind of feel like, oh, yeah, everything, you know. And I just never really left feeling good, except for one time, you know, out of a handful, I never left really feeling good. And I thought there was something really wrong with me.
Right.
And I was talking to Danielle, your wife, and she goes, well, you know, Jimmy didn't really, you know, he didn't really jive with it either. And, you know, he just kind of did his own thing. And a light went off. I was like, holy fuck, you can do that?
That's an option?
Like,
right.
It never occurred to me that that might be an option. Now, again, I don't want to get emails from people saying, like, dude, how could you shit on AA? I'm not. I'm just saying, for me, it just wasn't the right solution.
I 100%. You and I have mutual friends where it has saved their life.
Yes.
So I'm not going to crap on
not
AA
at all.
Either. It just, the first meeting was wonderful for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then everyone after that, I went for a month.
Yeah.
And everyone after that was kind of what you said. It's like, I felt bad about myself.
Yeah.
As I was, I'm not, what?
That's one of these two phones.
Can you turn off all of your phones?
Yeah.
We are talking about something serious here.
You know,
we're talking about sobriety.
We're talking about alcoholism and.
Wait, you know what's weird, you guys? I can just.
The Red Sox just scored.
Oh, man. See,
is that what that is? Is that a Red Sox update?
The rain delay.
Are they in delay? We'll certainly get kept abreast of that.
Still raining.
I don't know why it has a theater voice, your phone.
We all miss Grandma. She was a good soul to... Bing, 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 bing. Yes, Sox!
That a boy, Ellsbury!
I've seen that happen.
Jacoby!
Oh, I'm sure it has. So, but anyway, yeah, I mean, we've had a lot of friends in the program as well, and it's great for them, but just for whatever reason, I didn't...
And I do remember, like, I got yelled at by a guy after my second meeting. He goes, you're not taking this seriously! Like, I showed up. What the hell else am I supposed to do?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm here. I'm lost. I'm drinking like an idiot. Aren't you supposed to accept me?
Yeah.
Isn't that the whole point? Is I came? That's the first step.
And also, why get angry at that? Because maybe you're having a hard time taking it seriously.
But I was taking it seriously. I didn't say anything. What the F? Like, why
did
you
talk like that the whole time?
I did a bit.
I had a guy.
I was talking to him like Jackie Mason.
Now, when you got up for your share, were you trying out material on people?
I went up and did some bits.
The other week, I was so drunk.
How drunk were you? Thank you, folks. Thank you. Sounds like you got a good
crowd.
I was
so drunk because I had weird issues with my dad, and I cry a lot at night. All right, you guys have been great.
I was so drunk, I'm here tonight.
Joke at all. I drove here
tonight? No. Last night, I was so drunk that I'm here today.
I see I'm getting the light at the end of the tunnel. Hey, guys, come on. Why can't we have fun?
You're not taking it seriously.
I had a guy who was running one of the meetings that I went to. Was probably 22 or something, but he was one of these kids who had just fucking already been through a lifetime.
By 16 years old.
Yeah, and so he was chewing on a straw. I was sitting up behind the desk, and, you know, and I said in my share, I thought, I was a little uncomfortable because it was very, you know, they said the thing about God or the higher power or whatever, and I just said, yeah, you know, I'm not really a construct that I have a relationship with, or well, however I said it.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy was just like, all right, man, whatever. Almost like, all right, you know, you're going to fucking fail at this. And I just sort of felt like, wow, judgy.
Yeah,
so I went to a different meeting thinking, well, I just didn't go to the right meeting. And that meeting was more depressing than the meeting that I had been to before.
I've had friends that bailed on AA, and even though they weren't into drugs, they found a better place at NA. For some reason, they there was like the people there were.
I've heard that as well.
Yeah,
I've heard that.
I don't know, but I will say that, you know, if anyone's listening to this and they're sort of on the fence, I do think it is important to have some type of counseling, some type of guiding. If you're not going to do the program, I had a therapist that I really liked, so I didn't really feel like, well, I'm not doing anything. I'm not pretending that I figured everything out on my own. Mm-hmm. But, you know,
well, I did that too. I did AA for a month, mm-hmm. and I really believe that it was helpful.
Yeah.
Even in that month, it just wasn't for me. But I needed it for that month to, instead of going to the bar or going wherever you're going,
right.
I could go there.
Right.
Was it social too? Like afterwards, you hang out?
No, they're all smoking and filthy.
Yeah.
No, I had to get away from that. But but then I went. Same deal. I would go once a week to a therapist, and then, you know, basically share for an hour with somebody, as opposed to, you know, 18 people getting up in the hour.
Yeah, and everyone else is bullshit.
Yeah, I don't hear that nonsense. And then there was the other thing. My rock bottom was not. That was the other, like, and again, I'm not putting AA in. I needed it for that month.
Yeah.
But I would hear these stories of people, like, they killed people. They lost family members. They drove cars through
Jimmy,
windows.
Come back to us when you've hit rock bottom.
My rock bottom was I called my girlfriend and called her a whore on the telephone. Right. But it still was enough for me where she said, if you keep doing that, I'm going to leave you. So that was enough
just
for me
like
to
a whore.
Stop. Yeah, dirty. That's my wife now. Sir.
Wait a minute. I'm sorry.
You may have misunderstood my point.
I apologize.
Did you remember doing it, or was it a blackout moment?
Oh, I remember doing it. And then I did black out, and I smashed my head on a sink in Grand Rapids, Michigan. That's a true statement.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
Also, it was while you were on the road.
Oh, yeah. I really only drank on the road. And, I would drink till they told me to leave. Not in a negative way. Like not, you've had enough. And it would be, we had a comedy club.
Yeah.
And they would all stay until 4 a.m, and then they would go, we have to go home and live our lives. And then, so you comics have to go, too. Oh, okay, I'll stop drinking now. And then the next day, I'd wake up and start it all over again.
Yeah.
But this time in Grand Rapids, I just got completely hammered, and then called my now beautiful wife Danielle, and then just was like, you're cheating on me. Why aren't you answering the phone? Are you out fucking somebody? It's like, no, it's 4 a.m. I'm asleep, you a-hole. You know, it's like, and then I remember I walked over to the sink and I smashed my head on the sink and I came to in a puddle of blood, and it was like, yeah, this is, I've had enough.
Maybe this is not the
best.
But
how are the shows?
Great shows, man. Great shows. I had to go get stitches in my head, and then the next night I'm doing a show and some audience, what's wrong with your head? Really? Really? That's appropriate to yell out at a person? And then I got what was at the time like a 9-minute bit that I improvised that night about smashing my head. And that was a staple of the Pardo show for a little while.
That's good. That's great.
So that woman heckling me, who I'm mad at, to this day I'm still mad at, because who yells that out? What if it was like this weird thing? Yeah. What's wrong with my head? I don't know. I've had that since I was born, a-hole.
It's so funny to be a sober. I mean, I don't miss drinking
at all, ever. Right?
I don't miss it at all. I mean, it was, I did it enough for 3 lifetimes. I honestly... When I look back and I kind of go like, well, I could drink all the time, or I could have a life and a career, and I'd rather have a life and a career, so I'm fine without it.
That's where we differ.
But
I'd rather eat hammered right now.
I think funny. I can pull off both, and everyone's going to be like, how does he do it?
It's amazing. What a balancing act. What a balancing act.
He has it all.
He's the most successful boozer I've ever seen. But it's funny because of what we do. We're essentially going and performing in bars.
Mm-hmm.
And so to stop drinking and then just have to be in it all the time is really, it's a fascinating dynamic.
It is.
But the longer you're away from it, the more you, and the more, at least the more I am, like, I'm happy every day.
I zip out of there pretty quickly. I
don't hang around either.
If there's a late movie showing, I will go see that movie. You know, if there's a 10 o'clock or a 9:40,
yeah,
maybe 9:50. These are all options, guys. On showtimes.
Wait, 9:55?
Yeah. Oh, you know what, Chris? If 9:55, I'll go to that movie.
We're breaking all the
rules. I used to work at a theater. There's no such thing as a 9:55 show.
Is that true?
No, that's a denial.
Across the board.
You can't say that.
No,
I can't.
You can't blanket with that. No.
You sure about that?
No, I've been to a 9:55.
I mean, I feel like I've been to at least one or two 9:55s.
Oh, I guarantee.
No, I feel like that.
Show me the stubs.
I think that's a real.
Show me the stubs.
I'm more happy.
This is a movie audit.
Guys, it's a good thing I brought my Stubbs wallet. I have a wallet devoted just to ticket stubs of movies I've seen.
Yeah. I got it at Stubbs in Austin, Texas.
It's made of barbecue brisket.
Yeah. Oh, delicious.
It is delicious. Oh, unfortunately, all the stubs are soggy. Oh. This was a poorly engineered bit.
I don't think it is.
But anyway, that always kind of helped me. Like, that was a light that went off that was very helpful to me.
Boy.
That helped me kind of stay.
Glad I could help.
Yeah, because you know, if when you're sort of a newly born sober person, and you know, like AA doesn't work for you, and then you've had it in your head, like, well, that's the thing that's going to cure me, even though that's not really how it works. You don't know that at the time, and that's not working for you. Then it's very easy just to go, ah, fuck it, I'm just going to go drink again.
Right, sure.
So just to hear, like, well, you don't have to. Oh wow, what an interesting concept.
Are you comfortable with me saying then that I was your sponsor? Because I'm going to start telling people, you know, I was Chris Hardwick's sponsor.
You should say that.
Yeah, I'm going to say it. And by sponsor, I mean I'm going to give you a couple bucks for this podcast.
I appreciate that. I think
for you to mention my name once.
I appreciate that.
I think it'd be great if you were the sponsor of someone in AA. They would have to, like, you know, deck out their car with your face on it and your name.
Tonight's sobriety share is brought to you by Jimmy Pardo. Check out Jimmy Pardcast.
I just
check
like
out Never Not Funny. Anyhow, my uncle. And then they go right into.
They go right back into the bit.
Oh boy, I don't want to be a sponsor associated with that program.
Jimmy's really responsible. Not like my father, who did not raise me well at all.
Never again. Never Not Funny at parkcast.com.
Never Not Funny.
Close it up.
Now, I want you guys to know this share is never going to be funny, but something that is never not funny is Jimmy Pardo.
Oh.
It's never funny to roll your car in a ditch over an animal and a couple children, but what is never not funny is Jimmy Pardo at parkcast.com.
People.
Jimmy Pardo.
Yeah, no,
I'm going to listen to that.
Wow. Hey, where's the coffee and cigarettes?
Seamless.
Can I just have coffee cigarettes? Just stir it in your coffee? Just pour the tobacco
Nothing
right in your fucking coffee.
Smoky tobacco breath.
I mean, it's I think we'll all agree. It's just like hickory smoked kisses. Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Nauseating.
But your show is, your show has continued to, I think, you say you really think the show's plateaued, or were you being facetious?
No, I meant, Audience-wise, we kind of, you know, us charging kind of plateaued it. We don't do, you know, we don't get the numbers that you guys get or the, you know, Comedy Death Ray and all that. You know, we're in the top 30 on iTunes, and, you know, you guys are, you know, with Corolla and all those guys are in the top 10 because our audience is, you know, cut in half, basically.
Right.
And we don't really add as many as you could because, you know, we have this 20-minute limit of a show.
While it's
helpful in that we're making a nice piece of change from it, you know, we don't grow as much as other shows.
Do you find yourself making the first 20 minutes a little top heavy just to, in an effort to make it seem more interesting, or
do you
just not care?
I don't. You know, I just come in and do the show.
Yeah.
And, you know, if the first 20 minutes is great, it's great. So, sometimes the first 20 minutes is slow. You know, and then you're like literally at the 21-minute mark, it kicks in, and then people are like, I think he does it on purpose. Yeah, sure I do. Yes, I'm that smart. And there's, wait, clock, funny!
Done.
Come on, guys, let's really kick it.
All right, you guys are paying for this shit now.
Yeah, come on.
Please. I didn't give you that fucking out-of-the-jar shit that I gave to everybody else in the first 20 minutes.
I fast-forward through the first 20 minutes of every show.
But you guys have had a lot of, you know, the show's been through a lot of changes, and I, you know, I hope that I can respectfully say that I thought the way you handled Andrew's death was really, it was rough.
That was rough.
It was a rough time, and you guys handled it really well. I mean, a lot of people, if they listen to Jimmy Shore, they don't know, but Daniel's brother, Andrew Koenig, committed suicide a couple years ago.
Yes.
Last year.
Was it just last year?
Yeah
February of 2010.
And so he was a very integral part of your show.
He was the video producer and... you know, very strong voice in the show. He had become part of the program, you know, where he had his crazy liberal hippie political views that he would jump in with, and I would pretend to get irate about them.
But he's just a sweetheart.
But a great guy. And, you know, it was interesting having that platform to be able to talk about my feelings was amazing. I mean, I don't want to make it about me, but it was amazingly helpful to be able to, you know, just kind of walk in and talk into a microphone and get, you know, all my, I'm actually getting choked up now talking about it, but to just be able to spill my guts into a microphone and people are listening, great. If they're not, great too.
People who understand because they understand the relationship and they were a part of it. It really
was interesting to be part of a community that rallied around Danielle and myself, and you know, to a lesser extent, but it's still important. You know, Matt Belknap, who was certainly part of it. I mean, you know, it was me, Matt, and Andrew. We were the three, you know, never not funny guys, and at that point, and so you know, it was hard for Matt too. So you know, to come in and be able to just again share our feelings on a you know podcast, it was you know really. I can't even think of the word, but it was helpful.
I went to the service.
Yes,
and,
you did.
And it was, the service was beautiful and really simple and sweet and funny at times. Mm-hmm. Danielle, who ran the service, was, I mean, I hope this doesn't sound, I hope this doesn't sound inhuman when I say this, but she was hilarious. Like in that situation, still had the presence of mind to like, hey, you know what? We're celebrating someone's life, and
right,
you know, we don't all have to, you know, it doesn't have to be all doom and gloom. We can really celebrate this. And she, it was so well run. It was beautiful. It was absolutely beautiful.
We did. I appreciate you saying that. She did a terrific job. And we invited just a handful of. We invited people that liked Andrew, like yourself and mm-hmm. and Paul Gilmartin and you know, other close friends of people that clicked with Andrew in some way.
Yeah,
and so you know, it was our people that I knew. It was a really small group of people that were there, but again, they had to have some sort of connection to Andrew. It wasn't like we just opened it up to
sure.
Hey, we're celebrating his you know
right.
Not celebrating, but you know, commemorating. But I remember Danielle did her. You know, they asked me to speak at it, and I didn't want to because I thought I had gotten everything out on the podcast. And then it was like, I do want to. I do want to speak on his behalf while I'm here. And Danielle went up and it was amazingly funny mm-hmm. and loving and pointing. Everything was perfect about it. And I remember my first line was, oh, I didn't know we could be funny.
And
like, I had to shift gears because it was like, I felt like, oh, now I'm going to look like the, you know, I always hate when comics try to look fake maudlin or, you know,
right.
Fake sincere. Not that I would have been fake, but I always think like when people used to go on like Bill Maher's show, comics would go on. It's like, but you know, you're still a comic, right?
Right.
You're not a pundit.
Right.
Stop acting that way. Be funny.
Right.
With your views.
Mm-hmm.
Quit trying to prove you're smart because you understand that one law. So I kind of feel that way about funerals too and memorials. Like we're still ourselves. And so to go up and be this fake, Andrew was a guy who was like, that wouldn't have been me. So, but I would have done it, you know?
Right.
So when she was funny, it was like, oh, thank God.
Yeah.
We could just be people here. This is, what a relief. And it was a wonderful day. And I appreciate you saying so.
And people laughed in it and they had fun. It was really nice.
I also think that was a release too. Like, oh, we can. This is not all
right.
Sadness. You know, I mean, it is. It's horrible. There's nothing worse than it. But it's like, we are here to commemorate his life, not to just dwell on.
Well, then, and the thing with comedy and laughter is like it is a tension release,
mm-hmm.
and it's not like you guys had been laughing the whole time. I'm sure it was the most unimaginably painful
2 weeks of my life.
Exactly,
I mean, it was just awful.
And so, you know, I feel like if we don't laugh at things, you fucking die. Like you just die because you.
You know, I feel the same way. This is going a different direction, but I feel the same way about weddings. Like whenever you go to a wedding and it's that person's big day. And like, there's a little snafu. Like the guy, the uncle gets up to do his speech in the church, and he can't find his papers, and everybody panics.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
You know, where are the papers for Uncle Don?
This day has to be perfect.
Where are the papers? It's like, I can't find the papers. Just say you can't find it, and everybody would go, Uncle Don can't find the papers, and everybody would relax.
People get so obsessed.
So Don Pardo's your uncle.
Yes.
No, it's not my uncle.
Oh shit! That's
not
perfect.
We're not talking about me.
That's
I'm not really mad.
That is amazing. People, the thing about perfection is that things that are imperfect are usually better and funnier. Like, how many times in a show have you like fucked up a bit, but then you got like 5 new minutes out
Absolutely.
Of it, or you were able to spin it in a way like so much better?
Yes.
So much better than just everything being super slick
100%.
And exactly the way it should be.
And that's what I feel like. As I keep going back to weddings. You'll have a story. Hey, remember the time Uncle Don screwed everything up? And then you can laugh about it. And then, but if you're so stressed out, oh, you ruined my day.
Yeah.
No, he didn't. It was literally 10 seconds. And if he would just laugh, if everybody would have just laughed about it, there's more tension in the room from about not laughing at it than if you would just laugh at it. I'm Dr. Jimmy. Everybody give me a call here. 591 Rock.
I saw this this photo set online recently of there were people trying to get married on the end of this little dock in a lake, and it was very, you know, picturesque and beautiful. The dock just fucking collapses, and everyone's like screaming and looking horrified. But then, like, the shots after that is everyone soaking wet, smiling, and hugging each other.
Right?
I was like, this is one of the most beautiful things I've seen, because I was expecting everyone to just like be like bummed out, and everyone was just, you know, it's a funny thing that happened. Now there's something quite, you know, extraordinary that happened at their wedding that didn't happen at a lot of other people's wedding.
And Tom Bergeron gave him $10,000.
here's my favorite Jimmy Pardo moments. In early 2004.
Oh my God, you know the date.
For a brief period of time, I was dating a young woman by the name of Lisa Loeb.
Oh boy.
I remember that. I totally forgot.
So I see Jimmy at the... So Lisa was opening for Heart at the Greek Theater.
Yeah.
And so I went, because we were kind of dating, and, you know, so I went. Yeah. And Lisa opened for them. And, you know, it was summer, early in the summer, maybe, or earlier in the year. Basically, she went on stage when it was still light outside.
But it couldn't be brighter.
It was bright.
Might as well going on at noon. It was not so bright.
Not a lot of people there yet, you know. It was still, you know, but she played, and, you know, it was great. And I see Jimmy Pardo there, and Jimmy is a huge Heart fan, and rightfully so, because that's the first time I'd ever seen Heart live. And fucking Ann Wilson's voice, I'd never appreciated the song Alone
that night
from the album Bad Animals until I saw her do it live. It was mind blowing, that woman's voice.
Yes, and by the way, I've seen them probably a dozen times. Never better than that night. Wow. That night was the Heart concert. She was amazing that night.
I mean, so relaxed, and the voice that just flows out. It was stunning. So I see Jimmy at this concert. A couple days later, we're at M-Bar. I see him in the parking lot, and he was like, "Hey, I didn't know you were a Heart fan." And he goes, yeah, I really like Heart. Yeah, it's not like we showed up for Lisa Loeb. And so without missing a beat, and I didn't care, without missing a beat, I go, "Oh, you know, we're dating." And I've never seen Jimmy Pardo backpedal.
What did I say?
You were just like, not that it was bad. I mean, it's because of Heart. I mean, I don't, but I've never, it was so, and I didn't care, but it was, I think it was just a moment of like, for once, I'm going to make him speechless.
Oh, well, you managed to do it. B, here's the weird part. And here's what I even hate about myself.
And I didn't give a shit. I didn't care.
But here's why I cared. I like Lisa Loeb. Yeah. I enjoyed Lisa Loeb. It was one of those jokes, like, I was so desperate to be funny.
Right.
That, like, I wasn't even like, I was like, we didn't go to see Lisa Loeb. Yeah. Well, I kind of did.
Yeah.
I went to see Heart and Lisa Loeb. I went to see that show. I like Lisa Loeb. I think she's a great singer-songwriter. So I was so desperate for that. So that's why part of
that such a fun
was,
moment.
Oh, no, everything went wrong.
Yeah, I know.
I did a joke that wasn't necessary. It's a joke that's not true.
Yeah.
And it's your girlfriend.
Oh, I've had so many of those moments too, where you just go, "Well, I just got to be funny." It's the same as dropping the pager. Like, I didn't have to do that. I was just trying to get some attention. But it was a wonderful moment, and I always loved how human it. I don't know. It was a very nice moment, and I never cared. It wasn't like, "Well, how could you say that about you know?" But
it was just a joke.
I know, it was fun. It was super, super fucking fun.
I like everybody. There are some artists I don't care for, and I'll talk about them.
You're a big classic rock fan.
I am, yeah, sure, love it. That's my nerd thing, guys.
Hey.
Look at me, I'm tying it in.
Jimmy Pardo has a tattoo?
What's up?
You have a tattoo?
Yeah, I got two tattoos.
What?
I had no idea.
What is it?
Yeah, I made a couple mistakes.
You're wearing short sleeves.
Is it the Bad Animals album cover?
Ah! No, I have a shark on this my right arm, and I have a you were at Parkastathon when they paid people a lot of money for charity if I would show my tattoos.
There's a shark.
This is a shark there. That's a shark.
Oh Jesus!
On that side, and then this is an anchor with my son's name on it, and a Target Band-Aid because I got a flu shot today.
Oh, that's adorable!
Yeah,
they give you a shot right in the anchor.
Yeah, I'm getting tetanus from the anchor. I think that's actually what they shot for.
Jimmy, you're not supposed to use a real anchor. It's just supposed to be a drawing of an anchor.
Oh, no wonder my arm's so heavy.
Yeah,
no wonder I'm bent over. My spine's breaking in half. Oh, I'm not bright.
You know what you should do is. you should show me a tattoo and go, "I'm a real big fan of John Oliver," because it just says Oliver.
I'm a big fan of the Oliver Platt.
Love Oliver Platt.
That was my joke about why we named my son Oliver.
Love Oliver Twist.
Why'd you just pick Oliver? I'm a character actor, Oliver Platt. Yeah. Think he's terrific.
His work in Murphy Brown.
I love
Murphy Brown.
Wasn't he like the painter in her house?
No, that was Robert. Oh, shit.
He was in Eraser.
Robert
Guillaume.
No, that was Benson.
It was Guillaume.
For the record, I knew it was not Robert Guillaume. I don't want anybody going, I don't really think it was Robert Guillaume. No, didn't.
He sure doesn't know it was Robert. No. So
wasn't it like Robert Pastorelli.
Yeah, yeah. And then he pastorellied. How you doing, folks? Come on. Ladies and gentlemen, 5-1 run.
Come on.
That's the kind of humor. Sadly, that is the kind of humor. Sadly.
I got a tattoo. I got a penguin.
What, you got penguin?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Love it. You know, Andy Daly has a penguin.
Really?
He has Chili Willy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, mine's like a
Happy Feet type of
No, like it's like a South African Jackass penguin.
It looks like a textbook. It looks like a painting of a penguin.
It's like what you see, like figure eight penguin, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Real big right here.
And what made you get it?
It's my favorite album. My favorite album.
I love that one.
Penguins aren't albums, Jonah. Penguins are animals.
I don't know why I said that.
There's a lot of beautiful albums in the album kingdom.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it's my favorite animal.
And the penguin?
Yeah, that specific penguin.
What do you love about it?
It was there was a place near my town in Hawaii called a Sea Life Park, and they had two penguins, and I would go all the time just to see the penguin show, or they would just play and they just.
Did you look
awesome.
At them and go, "You don't belong here in Hawaii either"?
They did though. They're warm water penguins. They're like, they're from the, you know, South Africa. It's not too cold over there.
All right, just trying to connect with you, Jonah.
Hey.
You heard him and penguins and Morgan Freeman.
They got. I always wanted a tattoo, and I just figured that was a good time to get one. Because I'm an adult and I can't regret it that much.
I have passed the tattoo age.
I can't.
No, I don't think so. I got mine at 41.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Both of them?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Oh, I had a nervous breakdown is a too extreme of a phrase. But this is weird. After my son was born, I kind of went through a, oh my God, what? I'm now a dad and life is different. Mm-hmm. And I haven't done anything crazy with my life, you know, except choose to go into stand-up comedy and tour the country in my car.
So you got the tattoos, you got your cock pierced, you fucked a cocktail waitress.
I did the third I did prior to my marriage.
Oh, okay, all right, good.
And a lot of them.
Yes.
I've got diseases.
Podcast.com.
So I got the shark, because it's my favorite.
Thing. It says a lot about each of our personalities.
Yes, I want to attack you, and you are a flightless bird.
So that would be your. watch what happens, Jonah. So the shark would be your Patronus.
I don't know what that means.
He doesn't know Harry Potter.
I don't know. What
neither do we.
At all.
I don't.
Wait a minute, guys. You're supposed to back me up on this. Now you're turning on me.
I've only seen like one of them.
Podcast.com.
Patronus is like a spirit animal that comes out of your wand and protects you from the Dementor's
animal.
Kiss.
You could just call it a spirit animal.
Well, yeah, but that's not as fun.
My spirit animal is a dream catcher.
I can't believe you got tattoos at 41. That's 41. Ballsy.
So I got the shark. Got the shark. And as my wife likes to say, because she and my beautiful son came with me. I think my son was 3 months old. And she had to go out. And she said, I never felt, never had a bigger white trash moment than breastfeeding my son in the car while my husband got a tattoo.
Of a shark.
Yeah, of a shark. And so I had that done. And then I kind of got the jazz for tattoos. Yeah. And I kind of felt like, well, this one's lonely. And at the time, it didn't have water. It was just a shark. And it was like, I got to get another one. So I went in to get the anchor with my son's name on it, which is really what I should have done in the first place. I should have just got the anchor with my son's
name. Or just name your son Shark.
That would have been another option.
Yeah.
So I went and got this one, which is, I don't know, on a scale of 1 to 10. A 10 is way too big. It's huge. It's ridiculous. I wish I would have got a subtle anchor. And then I was like, and now the shark looks weird with because this one's so damn big. So then I went back and had the water added to the shark.
Yeah.
I think tattoos only really look good when they're big. Like a little tattoo, it's kind of prison style.
That's what the guy said. He goes, it's prison or ladylike if you get a small one.
Yeah.
So I believed him.
I think it looks great. I think those are great tattoos.
Now we're talking.
Yeah, yeah.
Now we're fucking talking.
That's coming from a young, hip kid.
You're not as young as you think you are.
No, I'm almost 30.
You're in your 20s? Still in your
20s? 29 this 29. Year. Yeah,
great. Happy birthday.
Thanks.
I saw Jonah do some standing-up comedy the other night. Terrific.
Oh, he's a gem.
Did a great job.
Thank you.
He's a gem on stage. Funny, likable.
As a, adorable. If I may, as a guy that doesn't see you perform quite a bit, it seems as if you're taking it seriously these days. And maybe maybe you were not 5 years ago? Is that safe to say?
Yeah, that's very, very yeah. safe assumption.
You can see it.
Yeah.
I'm complimenting. I know that sounded like I was crap.
No, that's great. I was doing it for a long time. Then I saw a lot of my friends getting better. And I also, 5 years ago, I started writing on more shows. And I was like, this is enough for me. But I would still do stand up, and then I would get really resentful towards myself because I was like, why am I even still doing it? I'm clearly not taking it seriously. And then I would feel bad about it and I wouldn't write as much as I should. Yeah. Right. Now I had a lot of, in the past year or two.
And the Meltdown show has been helpful because you have a good stage to go up all the time.
Yeah, but I never develop anything on there just because I'm hosting. Right.
That's the best place to develop it.
Yeah, but I host it with Kumail Nanjiani.
Yeah, you can't develop anything with him around. Boy, that guy sucks.
Where are you going, Matty?
Yeah. Juices out of you.
My graphics guy.
Okay, buddy.
Yeah. Oh, do you need to, Matt?
But thanks. No,
Matt's got attack on the show.
I have been trying.
That was a terrific set.
Thanks.
And somebody else I know that saw you recently said, he had a great set. It's Jonah Ray. And it was like, no, you're mispronouncing somebody's name.
Yeah.
And
well, that became my stigma for so even really early on because I just, I was started hanging out and doing shows with, at the M Bar so soon. And I wasn't prepared for the upkeep of writing new material. Right. And then I just had a stigma placed on me by everybody. It's like, oh, he just has the same jokes all the time.
I don't remember that stigma. I just didn't care for you.
Yeah.
No, that's not how
I'm glad you guys are working this out now.
Well, Boris Hamilton. Remember him?
Yeah, sure. I know Boris very well.
Yeah.
Oh my God, those old M Bar shows and the old Gypsy Cafe shows we used to do.
I never
too.
Did those.
Danielle did.
Danielle did. Jimmy Dore did. I'm a headliner from the road, man. I'm not doing open mics.
Yeah,
I was. I had some really weird bravado. Arrogance. About
no, I understand though. It's like something changes when you go on the road and you get paid to do comedy in front of real people. It becomes like I've been occasionally doing Matt's open mic Sunday nights at Meltdown.
That is great.
But in general, at this point in my life, I probably wouldn't go just do an open mic. I mean, I did for years, but
yeah,
but
I think you get 16 years ago. Though.
But it's also because, sometimes, an open mic, if you're, if you're a young comic, it's invaluable. You need to be getting up on stage as much as possible. You need to be hearing yourself tell jokes out loud. You need to be feeling that connection to the stage and having a mic. But when you've been doing comedy for a long time, there's a diminishing returns point. Yes. Where it's like, well, they're not going to laugh at stuff maybe that the crowd in Milwaukee is going to laugh at. It's just a different dynamic, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And at the time, for me... I was getting enough stage time on the road,
yeah.
So I didn't feel I needed stage time here. I was like, well, I already got my group of friends, so I don't need to go there to make friends. So I'm just going to stay home and drink.
Yeah.
You guys go and do that.
Yeah.
I wish I would have done it, though. I wish I would have gone and, been part of that camaraderie. And
you're welcome at the Meltdown anytime, my friend.
Yeah. Not so much now, guys.
Okay.
Todd will be there tonight. Todd Glass.
Oh, no. No, tonight's the wrong night for me, though.
No, you don't think so?
No, I don't like to see my jokes being done by other guys.
Podcast.com.
Todd Glass and I work out at the same gymnasium, and we insist.
Gymnasium? Do you guys go in the tights, no shirts, curly Q mustaches?
And they have, just the bar
we got
with
shirts
the big,
on. We got the
bare knuckle boxing.
Yeah. No, they lift those weights with the big spheres.
Spheres
on both sides of the pole.
We do that.
The big dumbbells.
Those leather belts that shake our weight up.
Those knee high boots.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. You guys should come. You guys will love it.
It's go down to the pier.
It's over there down the boardwalk. Yeah.
Go down the boardwalk and punch each other in the neck.
We finish up. We have a couple of ciggy butts, and then we head on with our lives.
We get a hot dog down at the pier. We get on the roller coaster. We go do some illegal gambling.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And then Todd steals his jokes.
It's a nice day.
And then Todd steals his jokes.
That was a horrible thing to say. I was just set it for humor. But we always, you can see that it's in our eyes. Like, I'll see him on a treadmill, and it's like, I immediately have to go, what's the bit? What's the bit? What am I going to do to make him laugh? And it always really ends up with us yelling at each other at the top of our lungs in the gym while everybody stares at us like, why is this happening? And then somebody will go, you guys are kidding, right? I'm not kidding. Maybe he is. And then people are like always look at us. And then
that's something that... going to Montreal where you're waiting in customs and you have that zigzagging line full of comics, full of people in comedy, and it's just you have to keep on doing the every time you pass the person, but it just goes on for an hour.
You know what's the same is when you're on the if you're coming down a Highland Boulevard is the perfect example because there's so many stoplights or any busy
great place to choke on a sandwich. By the way,
I had a tough time last night. could have used some more traffic last night for help. when you pull up next to somebody you know, and then you oh hey, and you wave to each other. Now you're stuck in traffic, bumper to bumper. So like every time you come pull up again next to their window, hey wacky bit, hi. Yeah. Oh, gonna do a little. Oh, I'm waving on the window. Now I'm laying down in my seat, and like it's the same thing. You have to continue the bit until.
Yeah, the bit some... I always do is I'm ignoring you. I don't see you.
Oh, I don't like that bit.
There
at
should
all.
Be a word bit. Or a hand motion that basically people understand to mean. I acknowledge you. I have nothing further to say. Right. We are going to go about our day now. Yes. And I don't know if it's like flarb or whatever it is. There should be some word that you can, that people just know, okay, done. No more pressure.
We're both funny guys. Yeah.
Don't
Let's
worry about it. It's not a problem anymore. Yeah. You don't have to perform for me. Right. I don't have to perform for you. We can just live our lives.
It was nice seeing you. Flarb. Oh, flarb to you too. Flarb. And then you walk away.
I feel much better. This Let's was great.
Flarb.
This is a good flarb.
Now, guys, I don't know anything about it. I know you guys have some sort of merchandising page over at that Nerdist.com.
That's right, my friend.
You got to get your Flarb shirts going.
We have to get the Flarb shirts going immediately.
Flarb when you've said enough.
A little talk bubble. Flarb.
So the Flarb t-shirt. Just
Flarb
means,
on the front. If it's on the back, your... When you say enough, Nerdist 2011.
Wow.
Guys, now listen. I want in on this.
He made up.
I made the idea up of making it into a t-shirt.
Excuse me, guys.
You made up t-shirts.
Excuse me. Guys.
I made up the Flarb t-shirt.
Guys, can I just say one thing?
Yes.
Flarb. See, now we're done with it.
All right. Well,
sorry, Matt, if we're keeping you awake.
Matt's glasses off. Just little slits for eyes right now. I just could not be more tired.
I'm just so exhausted.
Attack of the Show is a good job for Matthew, but it is sapping every bit of energy he has. It is a full-time job.
I literally have a graphic session happening right now until midnight or something like that.
You want to go over there?
No.
Okay.
You got an update on that ball game?
You got to go, Jonah?
Yeah, the Braves are in the 11th inning.
Oh, that means that that other team tied it up.
Cardinals.
They're still Astros. A half game.
What about the white shoes?
Red Sox still ahead by one run, rain delay.
And what about the Devil Rays lost, right?
Devil Rays.
By the way, they're not called the Devil Rays anymore, I should tell you.
My favorite part is all the past sports stats you guys are doing when someone eventually listens to this.
What I like is you shutting up.
He's got you there.
Flarb stamp on it.
Hey, guys, Flarb.
Oh, Flarb. I'm back.
Jamie, I wasn't really looking forward to having you on the podcast, but this has been a lot of fun.
What the fuck?
Wait, that was a double-handed compliment. Right? I was really looking forward to you, and this
wasn't
a lot of fun.
I wasn't looking forward to it.
Oh, you weren't?
I was just trying to pull a mean joke to you.
You did it.
And it hurt?
I misunderstood it.
Yes.
And I took it as a compliment.
Jonah's not used to someone biting smart. Back.
Not.
He's not used to someone biting
person
back.
Person just here docile.
Yeah, exactly. So this is good. This is a good dynamic for you guys.
My pleasure.
Yeah.
Well, we're at our hour, Jimmy Pardo.
That's only been an hour?
Yeah. 68 minutes.
Felt longer.
68, 14, 15, 16, 17.
I thought we were about 90 minutes. 18. I'm not kidding.
No.
Was it really?
I mean that complimentary. I mean, it flew by, but I thought it was a lot longer than this.
No.
What does that 68 say? Minutes. That's not a good thing.
No, that's weird, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Felt like longer. Yeah, that's never a good thing.
But I mean that complimentary. That's a weird thing.
We enjoyed our time.
This feels like it sucked more of my life. I mean that as a compliment.
You know, if we keep on talking about this, it will be 90 fucking
there
minutes.
There was so much enjoyment that it felt like 90 minutes.
Until well, you have now. A family to get to. Matt's got to get to a graphic session. You've got to get to your meltdown show.
Yep.
I weirdly don't have anywhere to be tonight.
Come by the show.
I don't know what to do with myself.
Come by the show.
I might come by the show.
Get me a sandwich.
Go to Meltdown.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to get you a sandwich. You have to promise not to eat it on Highland Boulevard. You remember what happened to young Jimmy Pardo?
Young Jimmy Pardo.
And they didn't survive.
Thank you for having me.
Jimmy, it was great to have you here. Enjoy your burrito, everyone. And hey, Flarb.
If you got $20, buy the podcast.
I said Flarb!
Fair enough.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by GoToMyPC! Stay connected with GoToMyPC, the missing link that turns your iPad into your computer. Download the free app and visit GoToMyPC.com for your free 30-day trial. Make sure to enter the promo code Nerdist.